The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, my co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Oh, what a beautiful day here in Sonoma County. A little bit overcast, but still wonderful, wonderful, a wonderful day to be alive, that's for sure. I have two special guests with me this morning. Joining me in the studio will be Santa Rosa City Councilwoman Julie Combs, and Adrian Lobby, who is a member of the group called Homeless Action. And as many of us know, homeless has become a major issue in not only our county, our city, but our country. And we're going to talk about what is going on here in Sonoma County and across the nation. You know, as many of you know, homelessness in the United States is really becoming a major problem. It's here in Sonoma County, we all have over 2,000 individuals that are homeless. And what I found out that over 1,000 of them, and we'll verify those numbers as we get into the interview, but over 1,000 of them sleep on the streets at night. You know, there's an old saying, there but poor fortune go you or I. And I think it's really important as a country, as a county, as cities, that we don't pass judgments on people. You know, it's easy to say, oh, there's a bad guy, or he could do better, or how come he's not good, how come he doesn't have a job, etc. You don't know. There's an old Indian saying, until I walk a mile in someone's moccasins, I really don't know what's going on. And rather than having judgments against people, we need to judge what we're doing as a society to support those people who are less fortunate than we are and to help them. I mean, I remember in the 80s when I worked for Sonoma County off Sonoma County CETA, which was the Comprehensive and Employment Training Act, we were putting people to work. We were putting people in colleges. I mean, people were, there was hope. There was not as much despair as there is now. You know, I wish we would debate war as much as we debate marijuana. You know, I mean, it's just, when we start thinking of where is our money going, how are we spending our dollars, our tax dollars? You know, if we would come and start looking at peace and how we can live together, maybe life would get a lot better for all of us. But again, let's stop judging and start looking at solutions. Well, you know, this was a very, very interesting weekend for me. And I have to do a shout out for Congressman Mike Thompson. I went to his pasta feed. He does it. It's an annual pasta feed. And one of the things that I found out, which is very, very interesting, is the pasta king, Art Ebio, has been doing this pasta gathering ever since Mike Thompson began to run for office. And I just felt compelled that I have to do a shout out because it takes a village. It takes a community to come together. And I sat in the room and I looked around and I said, you know, as bad as I feel sometimes when I look, you know, when I listen to the news and I read the newspaper, but when I was in that room, I says, you know, there's 450 people in this room that really care, that want to make a difference, that want to see change. You know, and that's how what we have to look at. We have to look at some of the good things that are going in our world rather than all this negative stuff, which just gives you a headache. I mean, after a while, you think, is there any hope for the planet, for God's sakes? Well, when I was in that room, I felt a lot of hope. And another thing that Mike Thompson did, and it's interesting, I'm sorry I don't have the names right now, but I am going to have them next week, and I will also mention them and talk about it in my column, the Santa Rosa Snippet. Mike, instead of a bunch of politicians just getting up there and telling us how they're going to save the world, he actually brought up three young people. One person read a beautiful, beautiful poem, and I mean, it touched me so deep on homelessness that this person actually could feel. And another person talked about, you know, the guns, you know, wanting gun laws, you know, common sense gun laws and why it's so important to these young people. And then the final one was a young person who talked about how how he is involved and what he's doing. And they were just so young and so alive and so energetic. And I said to myself, you know, Elaine, just quit worrying. You're going to be a great grandmother. This child is coming into some pretty good ideas and pretty good situations that hopefully are going to change our world a little bit. You know, you got to have hope, folks. You can't give up. And if you feel like giving up, get involved. And the best thing you can do is to remember on June 5th, that's the simplest way to get involved, and that is to vote. Go to the polls and vote. Or if you have that absentee ballot at home, make sure that you mail it in before June 5th so it is counted. I'm going to try to get somebody from the Sonoma County Office of Voter Registration to start talking a little bit so they can explain as how your ballots get counted and when they get counted. But it's very important that you mail those ballots in before June 5th. And we have some very important, extremely important races, particularly on the sheriff's race. You know, we have three people for the first time in 35 years that are actually running. And for you folks who are at home in front of your computers, you couldn't make some of the open mics that they've had, some of the forums that they've had with the sheriff. You can go on www.womenspaces. Click, go look, you'll see there's a little section called political. Hit that, and you can hear the interview that KBBF 89.1 FM did of the three candidates. And it's very insightful. You know, it's one thing to get a flyer. You know, a flyer is just a piece of paper. It has no feeling. But when you listen to somebody or you shake their hands, it's a big difference. Well, you know, we just got finished with Mother's Day. My goodness, what a beautiful day it was yesterday. I just looked around the room and I thought to myself, you know, how wonderful it is to have family, how wonderful it is to have children and grandchildren. And now me, the old lady here, is going to be a great grandmother. And there we are looking at my granddaughter, Amber's little tummy there. She's getting bigger and thinking that there's life is growing. And I start thinking, you know, I have to remind the folks once again what Mother's Day is all about. You know, we think it's all about, you know, it's beautiful. You know, don't get me wrong. I really love the fact that, you know, I got flowers and I got all kinds of goodies. But I still feel I have to go back a little bit and remind folks. You know, the origin of Mother's Day is very important as women to understand that. The origins of Mother's Day as celebrated in the United States date back to the 19th century. In the years before the Civil War, Ann Reeves Jarvis of West Virginia helped start Mother's Day work clubs to teach local women how to properly care for their children. So that was the first step of Mother's Day. These clubs later became a magnifying force in a region of the country still divided over the Civil War. In 1868, Jarvis organized Mother's Friendship Day, at which mothers gathered with former Union and Confederate soldiers to promote reconciliation. Can you imagine the mothers coming on a battlefield and saying that we have to have some reconciliation? Amazing. Around the same time, other women around the country organized their own Mother's Day. Abolitionist and suffrage Julia Ward Howe wrote the Mother's Day Proclamation in 1870. And if you want, go again on the archives at www.womenspaces and listen to the show last week when we play the Mother's Day Proclamation. You can also get it on YouTube, which called on all mothers to unite and promote world peace. Can you believe that, to promote world peace? And here we are 148 years later. We have more wars now than we ever had. I mean, to be celebrated every June 2nd. And then there was a woman by the name of Juliet Calhoun Blakely, a temperance activist from Michigan, inspired a local Mother's Day to be celebrated there in the 1870s. And finally, President Woodrow Wilson made it official holiday in 1914. Amazing history. But, you know, I love that proclamation. And, you know, I'm not going to read the whole thing. I played it last week. But I just wanted, there's one line, and I have posted it on, like I said, on Women's Spaces. But I wanted to read you this one paragraph in the proclamation. And here it goes. Say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our husband shall not come to us seeking with carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons, listen to this very carefully, our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We women of one country will be too tender of those of another country to allow, listen to this line, to allow our sons to be trained to injured others. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. Amazing. 148 years ago, women were calling out for peace, And to say, this is so amazing to me. To allow our sons to be trained to injure others. In other words, all war is one mother's son killing another mother's son. And now we're so blessed, you know, we've got women on the battlefield. Hooray, we've come a long way, baby. Anyway, that's a lot. That's a lot to munch on. But, you know, that's what Women's Spaces is all about. We got to think about these things. Well, oh, that's a lot, you know, when I think about it. You know, I think of all the mothers, you know, all the mothers across the globe. I mean, you know, here we sat, you know, we had a beautiful, beautiful, we had what was a brunch, the kids made it for us, and I was so aware of all the trees and everything, but I couldn't help but think of the women, say, in Palestine, or the women in Israel, or the women in Syria, or the women in Iran and our Iraq. I mean, I couldn't help but think about them. So we're going to take a musical break, and the song I'm going to be playing is for the mothers, and it's sung by a woman by the name of Betsy Rose and the Women's Choir. And I'm dedicating this song to all the mothers across the globe, many having so many challenges with wars, hunger, and homelessness. Let's take a minute to reflect on what we can all do. You know, just think, you know, what is it? You know, can you make a donation to an organization? Can you write a letter to the editor? You know, can you, when somebody walks up to you for some change, maybe give them a dollar, you know, and thank the great spirit, say, gee, I have that dollar to give to somebody else. And that person maybe that doesn't have a dollar. So think about it. And also think about the mothers across the globe to send a prayer out that one day we as a human family who live on our Mother Earth, you know, like we are crying, like that song, Brother Warrior, that I love to play. We are crying for a vision that all living things can share. Beautiful thought. Well, here we go for the mothers. And when we come back, we will be talking with Councilwoman Santa Rosa, Councilwoman Julie Combs, and Homeless Action participant or founder, I believe it is, or one of the co-founders, Adrian Lobby.
I sing for the mothers all over the earth, for their power, for their love. I ache for the mothers all over the earth, for their sorrow, for their love. May their broken hearts be cradled. May their righteous anger be heard. I pray for justice and healing for all of the mothers all over the earth.
I sing for the mothers of soldiers at war, for their power, for their
for their sorrow, for their love.
sing for mothers of children with AIDS.
For mothers in prison.
Teenage mothers.
For mothers with cancer.
For mothers in countries at war.
For mothers who cannot feed their children.
May their broken hearts be cradled. May their righteous anger be heard. I pray for justice and healing for all of the mothers all over the earth. I sing for the mothers who have no voice, for their power, for their love. I ache for the mothers who have no voice, for their sorrow, for their love. May their broken hearts be cradled. May their righteous anger be heard. I pray for justice and healing for all of the mothers all over the earth.
I like that. Righteous anger. That's how I feel sometimes, you know. You just feel, you just don't know what else to do but to be angry. But then what I say to myself, I say, no, the first letter in angry is A, means take action. And it helps a lot, folks. Anyway, for you just joining in, you're listening to KBBF 89.1 FM Calistoga. I want to remind my listeners that the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. By the way, people ask me, why do I call myself Elaine B.? Well, the B is really for Beverly. But it also reminds me I'm doing the best I can to be here now and that I'm a beautiful child of the universe. And I used to do workshops, and I'd have people take the initial from their middle name and some sort of action, that kind of, some sort of identifier that, you know, what are you, what are some of your belief systems? Well, without waiting any longer, I want to introduce my two guests here in the studio, Councilwoman Santa Rosa, Councilwoman Judy Holmes, and our homeless action advocate, Adrian Lombe. Good morning, ladies. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, Eileen.
Well, thank you so much for being here. You know, and we're going to do something a little bit different because I'm going to interview both of you. So, you know, I'll kind of ask the questions and we'll go back and forth. And I want to tell my folks a little bit about you. Is that okay?
Oh, sure. My middle initial is N. And I use neighbor.
A good neighbor. Fun to be nosy. All right. Come on. I got to know everything. You know, and also a nice, nurturing woman. Let me tell you something. And then, there we go. Anyway, let me tell you a little bit about Adrian Lobby. She is the founding member of the local grassroots group Homeless Action. She is also a producer and host of Pushing Limits on one of our stations here, KPFA Disability Radio Program, and works with Racial Justice Allies of Sonoma County. Adrian has received two local awards for her work on homeless issues and is known for her passion as well as her research and fact-based information. What awards did you win, Adrian? Can you mention them?
Well, I've got an award from the Task Force for the Homeless and another one from the Peace and Justice Center.
Well, congratulations.
Well-deserved. It was wonderful to have that. It's very, very sweet.
Well-deserved. Well-deserved. Well, let me tell you a little bit about Julie Combs. You know, Julie Combs and I met when I was on the Community Advisory Board, CAB. It was actually one of my first appointments that I ever accepted, and I was like a nervous wreck. And she was so supportive. You know, I tend to be a little outspoken, and sometimes you put your foot in your mouth, and Julie really helped me to move along and to learn how to work with the group and how to get some of the things that I wanted done. So I really have always appreciated that.
It was a pleasure to serve with you.
Yeah, it was fun. It was very interesting. Anyway, Julie Combs is, you know, her commitment to community service started at an early age in North Carolina, where she formed her high school's first ecology club and started recycling newspapers. Julie received her Bachelor of Science degree in mechanical engineering from Syracuse University in 1988 and received her Bachelor of Science degree. You worked for the American with Disabilities Act as a coordinator, and also you served as the senior plans reviewer for the city of Asheville, North Carolina. So you were born in North Carolina.
I was actually born in Iowa, but we only lived there 6 months, so it doesn't really count.
Oh, that's interesting. Did you live on a farm, or did you do that?
My grandfather had a farm in the Midwest, yes. He had cattle, apples, and bees. And so that I grew up visiting that farm regularly, but I spent a lot of time in North Carolina as a young child and a teen.
Well, that kind of explains some of your values, you know, from coming from the Midwest like that. Mm. You know, it's kind of very, very family oriented, very mm-hmm. goal oriented. Well, you were elected to the city council in 2012, and you in 2016 you were elected for a second term.
Yes, thank you.
You've worked on the comprehensive housing agenda to address current housing crisis and provide both immediate and long-term relief for Santa Rosa residents. And also, you approved a $3 million of what does that mean? Shovel-ready affordable housing project. What was that?
Yeah. Well, we put out a request for folks to submit projects they were ready to go on. And we got some... I think we got a total of 54. 36 of them are very affordable, and then the others are what we would call area median income housing. So we did a lot of affordable housing. That's a lot to get for $3 million to boost the production of housing in the area. Everyone knows we have a housing crisis here, and ultimately the solution to homelessness is going to be affordable housing availability.
Well, talk a little bit. Let's start with you a little bit, Julie. Let's start, talk a little bit about the homeless situation here in our city.
Yeah.
And how does it compare maybe to the nation? And what are some of the things that the council has done of late to kind of help the program along? I know there's a lot of stuff that went on in the council meeting. We're going to talk a little bit more about that with Adrian. But talk about some of the issues that are in front of you and what some of the things that you have done are.
Well, many people don't realize that California as a state has a third of the homeless population of the nation. So while there is a severe national problem with regard to homelessness, the problem is far worse in the state of California. And the city of Santa Rosa has certainly got more than its share. We have easily 1,200 people on the street, several thousand homeless people in Sonoma County. And most of these folks are our people. Easily 86%, at least according to the last study, became homeless while in Sonoma County. So we had a number of people around the time of the crisis in 2008 who lost housing, and we had a number of folks who came back from wars who had problems getting into housing. We have a mental health crisis, so we have folks who have mental health issues on the street, but we also we have women who have experienced domestic violence. There's the high number of the women on the street have had domestic violence experiences. We have the problem that there isn't affordable, low-cost housing to go into. So a person who's getting, say, Social Security disability to the tune of $800 or $900 a month can't afford rent here. But they grew up here. They live here. They're our people. And I think it's really important for us to focus on that.
Let me ask you a quick question. You know, I can't help but go back to the fire. You know, all of a sudden there was such a horrendous fire. All of a sudden you got these trailers are set up. You got all this stuff is happening. It happened so quick. Shelters. I mean, I was just amazed how quickly everything happened. What holds back from the homeless? Why can't we respond?
I love that question. And I wish when we declared as a council a state of homeless emergency, we wrote to the governor and said, please also declare a homeless emergency so that we can receive emergency funding. FEMA funding, state and federal funding came through to help the folks who were displaced because of the suddenness of the fire. But we don't have funds for the slow homeless emergency, the homeless crisis we have, where people become homeless one or two at a time until we have thousands. So there's a disparity in how our system is set up to handle an instant emergency like the fires versus a long-term sort of structural emergency like our current homeless crisis.
Did you want to say something, Adrian?
I sure did, because it was... what happened after the fire was so bitter for so many people because there was so much love given to people who had gone through this trauma. And there were people sitting on the street corner on 6th Street under the viaduct going, where's the love for me? Why can't any of this work for me? And so I understand the financial constraints. That's why we don't have the city staff out there working overtime to do stuff. But the community came forth in a very magical and wonderful way for the fire victims. They don't come forth like that for homeless victims. And that has to do with, stereotypes, stigma.
Well, the judgments, like I mentioned
judgments,
at the beginning,
exactly.
that we need to not judge. We need to start looking at mm-hmm. solutions because it can happen to anybody. It's like all of a sudden you have a CEO of a huge company, all of a sudden gets sick, there's not enough insurance, and before you know it, boom, they could be out on the street with their whole family. Yeah. I mean, you just never know.
It is true. It can happen to anyone, but it's also a condition of poverty. You really don't see very many rich people out there because when they have a problem, I mean, look, rich people do have problems. They have mental health breakdowns. They get addicted to things. They go into bankruptcy, but they have nets to catch them. They have a friend who has a cottage. They have an extra house. They have stocks and bonds to sell. And the way I think of homelessness is it takes two traumas. It takes an initial something that happens. Maybe you have a divorce. Then on top of that, you lose your job. Or the stress from the divorce gives you a mental health issue. That's when people run through all of their resources. Their families and their friends can't hold them anymore. They fall into homelessness. And it is a deep, deep fall. It's really hard to get out of it.
Yeah, it's a pit. And it's so hard to get up out. Especially when we have had the federal government and the state government combined cut our homeless housing resources by 80%.
That's
so
right.
We
That's
don't have
right.
the resources as a city and a county we used to have 30, 40 years ago. They're just gone. So our city has put in, like when I first got on council, we put in about $800,000 a year toward homeless services. We're at $2.4 million now. So it's a considerable increase in what we're trying to do as a city. That's on top of the $3 million for housing that we just did. But we still don't have enough housing for everyone.
Well, I came across this when I went to, I forgot exactly where I picked it up now, the Homeless Encampment Assisted Pilot Program. And this is frequently asked questions. Well, I know we had an encampment over by the Roseland area here in Santa Rosa, and
yes.
then that was an authorized encampment, I thought.
That's a debatable point. The county did provide some services there while claiming it was not an authorized encampment at the same time. So it's really hard to say whether that's an authorized encampment or not. But I think the point of the question is, why don't we have any approved encampments on public property now? And I think that's a legitimate question that we need to be asking ourselves.
Well, what do you think the answer is?
Well, I know the answer because I've been asking at council regularly that we have a designated city property for an encampment until we can have more shelter beds and then until we can have more housing. And so far, I have not been able to get four votes. You know, with a 7-member council, you have to have four votes to move anything forward. And I so far have been unable to get those four votes. One day when I asked, I couldn't even get a second for the motion. So I think we're seeing some improvement there. I'm seeing some shifting in thinking about it. But with regard to the county, I'm not seeing the change to support having an authorized safe haven or a temporary shelter for people so that they can sleep at night and have sanitary conditions without fear of being moved over and over.
You know, you just think of a simple thing like somewhere to sleep at night and somewhere to go to the bathroom. I mean,
right. And, you know, we complain, oh, they're messy, but we don't provide garbage service. Or we complain that they're, you know, not going to the bathroom in right places, but then we don't provide a porta potty. So, you know, it's a double whammy for some of these folks.
You know, Adrian, in listening to this and working with Homeless Action, how does all this affect the folks that you're working with? And what are some of the ideas that you've come up with on, as far as solutions go?
You know, we did a little demonstration one day. We were down in the Unified Square down in the city center. And this guy was, I was passing out our little leaflet. And he said, so what, can you help me? And he'd just been out of a hospital. He'd gotten in an accident when he was in Santa Rosa. He'd gotten out of the hospital out of 5 weeks of recovery. And he was still very, very ill. And he said, where can I go tonight? And it was night after night, I could not find a place for him to go, just to be. And it's just a metaphor, really, of what happens to individuals when they become homeless. And we all get used to it. We all think, well, there's those homeless people they're doing, and we don't know, one, we don't know what they're doing, we don't know who they are, and then when they camp, obviously they camp, because what else is there to do? Some of them just camp with a sleeping bag in a bush, others get together with three or four people and try, but they kind of try to hide, because the minute there's attention on a camp, then the police come, and the police say, well, you're not allowed to be here, and they're all scattered all over again.
And now, don't you think too, there's a certain level of shame that people have, you know, that you say they hide, you know, maybe that there's some feeling of shame, or if I come forward, people are not going, they're going to judge me rather than help me.
Well, and people do judge them. So it's, to me, they internalize the stigma. And maybe they feel like it's somewhat their fault. You know, I lost my house, I didn't save enough money, or I didn't get a good enough job, or whatever, so now I'm homeless, it's my fault. Of course, people do take that on. But I think it's more what happens when they're out in public. People really try to hide that they're homeless. So they try to find a place to stash their stuff so they don't have to carry it. They try to get showers and dress. Most of those 2,000 people that are homeless, you will never guess they're homeless, because they're trying very hard to appear that they don't need anything, that they're fine, you know. And they do need things.
Well, you know, they, in this homeless encampment assistance program, can you give a definition of what is an encampment? I don't quite understand that when they use that word.
Well, our definition as a city is very broad, and basically it's any shelter outdoor that someone is sleeping in, on either a public place or a private place.
See,
but let me just say, in all of us, in order to be safe, in order to have our needs met, we create little communities for ourselves. All of us do. We all have networks of friends who look out for us. Homeless people do this too. So the encampments that our city focuses on tend to be when there's groups of more than 10 people. But people make groups of 10 people because then somebody can stay behind and watch the stuff while other people go to work. Somebody can help another person feel safe sleeping because they're awake. Women often want a group of women or a group of women with some safe men so that they feel safer sleeping. Folks make communities, and we're calling those little communities encampments.
That's interesting. You know, here we live in the county. Like, I'm thinking that the one thing that I always, my mind always goes to is that property on Chenate Road.
Mm.
I don't know why.
There it is.
I was
well, it's
I was
major.
In the hospital there, by the way, in 2010. before us, Sutter built their new hospital. And I remember as I got better, I could go around and, you know, and they were talking about the building the new hospital, and this was going to be vacated. And I remember thinking, God, they can make little rooms, you know, and rent them out very inexpensively. You know, like you said, the $800 a month person, maybe $200, you know, they say, what is it, the 15 or 20% of your income. You know, what's, I don't understand what stops. And then I'm going to play a song also. We're going to take, in a few minutes, we're going to take a musical break. And it's called The House I Live In. It was a song that was written in 1943. And it was for the soldiers. And it was the idea of letting people know what American values are. Mm-hmm. You know, and here we are in 2018. And it seems like our values are just dissipating.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. Yeah, helping each other, helping our neighbor. I know my grandmother used to give food out the back door during the Depression because we had, my grandparents had a farm, so they had food when other people didn't have food. I know she always viewed herself as it was her job, that people were down on their luck. When we had the last sort of Great Recession, people weren't as open as they were toward helping each other. And that's a real problem. We've developed a kind of level of fear, so we aren't embracing our own neighbors and helping lift them up. So that's too bad. One of the reasons that we're seeing is that a lot of the key property in the area, Shenate, the Water Agency building, the fairgrounds, the Veterans Memorial parking lot, these are all controlled by the county. So the city can't put temporary shelters there. Only the county can do that. So I can't answer for why the county didn't use Shenate.
Well, that's a good question. Do you have any idea?
Well, I know we went and talked to them early on, and my guess is that the neighbors are scared of it, and the county supervisors just not willing to stick their necks out.
And that's been a problem. One of the first actions that I took as a council member was to create what we call the CHAP program, which allows churches and commercial property owners to have sheltered encampments on their property, essentially by right. And we had a church try to do that. And the neighborhood was so up in arms about it that the church, which was very well-meaning, withdrew the tent encampment. But now they have a safe parking program. So it's sort of like the next step up is people with cars. And somehow that's sort of more acceptable. These are people who have managed to own a car.
Right.
And I haven't figured out why there's this separation in tolerance between somebody who doesn't own a car and somebody who does own a car.
Well, also the intolerance of neighbors. I mean, people are afraid. I mean, I can understand
yeah.
the fear, but what you have to recognize is I'm more afraid of people walking around not having a place to be contained than somebody who's in a neighborhood contained where there's some control. And then to me, that would be less fear. And from what I understand, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Adrian, most of the encampments that have happened, except for maybe an incident here and there, because you're dealing with some people that have mental health problems.
Right.
But basically, wouldn't you say that most people cooperate and set up systems for themselves to live?
They certainly do. I mean, people live in encampments now. So what we've been saying for years and years is, like, let's just let what's happened be real. Let's let it come out of the shadows. Then you can bring public health in. You can bring caseworkers. You can bring food in. You can bring all of these other systems that help people stabilize. But we do find that once people, when we have these encampments that are public, that's what I call them, that then they develop self-governance. They have camp councils. They develop their own rules. They decide this person is, or that person's not appropriate here and is making trouble and shouldn't be in this camp. You know, you don't really have to enforce some code of behavior because the people who live there will say, you know, this isn't safe for women. We got a guy out here who's just not safe for women, so he's out. And we do find that most encampments will allow more women in because they understand women they're more vulnerable out on the streets. So they allow more women, and the women do definitely come to each other's aid. They will holler out, you know, he's bothering me. And suddenly there's three women there going, you know, you got to cut it out. You got to calm down. You got to go over here. You got to stop it.
You know, they also, I'm sorry, they also, though, need the security that if they're having a problem, when I call the police because I'm having a problem in my neighborhood, you know, like a very loud, noisy neighbor or a neighbor who's has too much traffic because they're doing something illegal in their home, when I call the police, I don't get kicked out of my house because I called the police. The police help me with dealing with the problem that I'm having in my neighborhood if I'm having such a problem. But unfortunately, at the encampments, when they call the police for assistance with a bad actor, sometimes the whole group gets scattered, and that doesn't help anybody. So
it sounds like there
we need as a council to have sort of like who's there with how many, just sort of some real basic oversight so that we can provide the kind of services that I get at my house. You know, I get trash removal, I get water and sewer, I get police, I get fire. I think all of our residents should be able to have those things where they live.
Well, that's the judgment again. Homeless, you're bad, or some, and they don't.
Or it's a choice. The one I hate is this is a lifestyle choice. I hear that so often, and it just drives me nuts. There are some chronically homeless people for whom moving into housing now will be challenging, but it is not the majority. And my experience personally, working one-on-one with such a chronically homeless person, was that over time, they come inside, and they're glad they did.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We forget there's another little historical piece, you know, especially with the mentally ill issue, is when Ronald Reagan decided he was going to empty all these facilities out. We had a whole support hospital up here on Janaet Road where people could actually go spend a week or two there and really kind of chill out. And it was an amazing program. And I remember when I was with CETA, that was one of the programs that we supported. Well, we're going
to
take
I just got to say, Ronald Reagan is one of my favorite villains. I got to say this because what he did with the mental health institutions was bad. He promised community services. He didn't provide them. But what he did cutting HUD was worse. The urban housing and human, what is it?
Housing
and urban development. They built low-income housing. He cut that by 50 to 60%, and that has not been replaced. That is directly related to the number of homeless people.
And now, Mr. Carson, the current director of HUD is talking about tripling the cost of HUD-subsidized housing, tripling the amount that the individual families must pay to stay in their HUD-supported housing, tripling the cost. We're going to see massive increases in homelessness if that happens.
Well, that's why, once again, I want to talk a little bit about this song. Was written. I want to just here. We're going to take a musical break, and the song I'll be playing, and I think it's appropriate for our topic, is called "The House I Live In," sung by Maxine Kinhon. The song was originally appeared in the musical "Let Freedom Sing," which opened on Broadway on October 5th, 1942. And when the film was made, Frank Sinatra actually took the song and made it to a national hit. To me, it is a reminder of the higher goals of our country that we forget when greed and war get in the way. When we will come back, we will continue our conversation about homelessness, some of the possible solutions, and the reasons for some of the recent actions with Santa Rosa City Councilwoman Julie Combs and homeless activist Adrian Lobby.
What is America to me? A name, a map, a flag I see. A certain word, democracy. What is America to me? The house I live in. Plot of earth, a street, the grocer and the butcher, and the people that I meet, the children in the playground, the faces that I see, all raised. races and religions. That's America to me. The place I work in, the worker by my side, the little town or city where my people lived and died, the howdy and the handshake, the air of being free and the right to speak my mind out, that's America to me. Things I see about me, the big things and the small, the little corner newsstand, the house a mile tall, the wedding in the churchyard, the laughter and the tears, the dream that's been a growing for 150 years. The town I live in, the street, the house, the room, the pavement of the city, or a garden all in bloom, the church, the school, the clubhouse, the million
Oh, that song. You know, folks, I'm 78 years old, and I grew up in a home where I'm actually first-generation American. Both my grandmothers came from, my one grandmother came from Poland, another came from Russia, and that was their America, their American dream, that they were going to come where there's freedom. They could have a home, they could have a backyard, they could grow. They didn't have, my grandmother used to say, in America, we don't have to worry about the police breaking in our door. You know, when she voted for the first time. So when I hear this song, and I remember Frank Sinatra singing it when I was a little girl, and I think of what's going on, there's a lot we need to think about, you know, and we're all in this together, and we seem to forget that. It seems like we look for saviors, like, oh, we're going to get elect this person, and they're going to make everything okay, or like Donald Trump, he's going to make America great again. Well, I see America's not... Those were our great values when we believed in those things, when we believed in equality for all, and it's very, very important. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to continue my conversation with Santa Rosa City Councilwoman Julie Combs and homeless action activist Adrian Lobby. Welcome back again, ladies. So we were talking a little bit about, let's get into the what happened at the City Council about two Tuesdays ago when there was an arrest of six people. Can you talk a little bit about that? And, you know, the most disturbing thing about it to me was, is I know you, Julie, you have sat through, whenever there's been a disturbance, you have always been there, and this time you yourself even walked off. So what give us a little flavor of what you saw and maybe a little flavor of what you believed was happening, Adrian.
Mm-hmm. Well, first let me say that I understand when people feel the need that they're stuck, that they can't go any further with the methods they've been using, and that they want to use civil disobedience as a method. I certainly understand that philosophy. There had been a previous disruption of the council that was done a little differently. Our council chambers are different than, for example, the county chambers or the chambers in most other cities, and that is that while you're not supposed to come to the dais, to where we sit directly, it is possible to do so. And that's been a worry for our city for some time. And after the previous week's action, the city manager made the decision to put rope barriers, kind of like you see at a movie theater, up at the base of the council so that we were not able to be approached directly. It's considered a little dangerous for folks to come straight to us. So What happened with the arrests was that some individuals decided to come through the barrier that was set up in order to hand us a paper directly. That doesn't sound too bad, but always, forever, the council has asked people who brought papers, et cetera, for us to give them to the city clerk who distributes them to us, because it's pretty scary to have someone walk straight up at us, especially if they're upset or angry. It's considered not safe. And we had an individual who insisted that that's what was going to happen. So we had to evacuate the chamber. And normally, you know, I know everybody. I generally know that I'm safe. But that does bother me. I am very sensitive to folks coming straight up to the dais. So I left also.
Well, what was your take on that?
I think this is a bit of a side issue. I really don't like that there's a rope there now separating us from them. It seems a little intimidating and silly. But really what happened there was an eviction, a massive eviction of the camps on April 19th. And really it was education for the activists, because the homeless people are used to being pushed around and scattered. But for us, we got to know people. We were trying to help people find another safe place to go. We took their stuff around. We carried it from here and there. And everywhere there would be sheriffs or the Santa Rosa police would show up within 24 hours and say, no, you can't be here. And at a certain point, people just felt like, this is ridiculous. Why can't we be somewhere? This is a vacant lot that no one ever parks in. This is an open field that no one's growing anything in. Why isn't there a place for people to be? And, of course, everyone was getting more and more exhausted. I mean, the homeless people especially. And so people's hearts were breaking. And they decided to come to the city council and do a demonstration that sort of demonstrated that. And they agreed, a certain number of them, to do civil disobedience. They linked arms and said, we're not going to go. We're not going to be just civil and sweet about this when you say go. We're going to stand here.
You know, it kind of reminds me of during the Vietnam era. You know, people got to a point where they just, you couldn't tolerate it anymore. You know, so you go to these city council meetings or these board of supervisors and you'd break all barriers and really get loud. And nobody was paying attention. And it feels like maybe that's what's happening. One of the things that I came out with last one I made kind of after the arrest, I said, why don't we learn how to de-escalate, not incarcerate? Because to me, it sounds like with that frustration, you know, and I know it puts Julie in a hard situation, because, you know, here she is, not only she's the only woman on the council, but some of her ideas are a little bit different sometimes, where there's a real challenge. And so then here, all of a sudden, she finds herself in a situation where she feels maybe there's some danger. So what are some ways people can come together for heaven's sake?
Some people within our larger community of homeless activists said, this is bad news. This just alienates people. We shouldn't be doing this. But when you look at it, we've been asking 3 to 4 years, politely, reasonably, fact-based wise, research-wise, you know, politely, personally, interpersonally. And with a huge variety of people have come in front of the council and the supervisors and said, do something different here.
And I want to also express my concern. When the city moved people, I have not been thrilled with our process of moving people. I want to be clear about that. But when we did, we had evidence to show exactly that we had places for people to go. They weren't all appropriate for each person, but this time when the county moved people, they could only show spaces for about half of the people. And that's really inappropriate to me. And many of those spaces were also inappropriate for folks to move to. So we have to, I think, if we're going to move people, we have to show where they can go in a way that's appropriate for them.
I think there's another thing, too, that Adrian brought up that's very, very important, is that there is no them and us. It's us. We're together.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and when they do put the barriers up, you know, people get, they all of a sudden, wait a minute. You know, and I know for myself, you know, I always feel like, well, I'm a taxpayer, you know, I own my own home, you know, how dare you, because you're putting the barrier for me. So there seems to be that there has to be some coming together. in a way that somehow we can work together, because...
And, you know, I have to give Julie a lot of credit. She has come to our meeting. She has come and asked us, what do you want from me? How can I help you? Consistently. And Jack Tibbetts reached out to the more radical group, the Community Action Coalition, said, I want to have a meeting with you. And we're hoping, you know, maybe there's some, like you asked for de-escalation. I think it would be great if the mayor would also do that and some other people to say, "What? Come on, let's talk. Let's just talk face to face."
Well, let's kind of end with that thought. You know, let's talk, you know.
And let's act.
Let's act. Well, listen, the first letter in talk is T. We have to trust one another. Mm-hmm. A, action. L, loving. And K, keep it going. You know, it's not going to happen in one night or one day. Well, any last words from you folks?
Already been too long. I mean, I can remember Adrian when I was first elected coming forward with suggestions for how to provide porta potties for folks and struggling to get just simple bathroom sanitation services for all of our residents.
Well, you folks heard it on Women's Spaces. Call your Board of Supervisors. Call your City Council. Go to the meeting. Say, we want a solution to this problem. And the first step is start talking to each other. De-escalate, not incarcerate. Well, thank you so much, Julie, Councilwoman Julie Combs, for coming into and enlightening us with some of your perspective, and to Adrian Lobby from Homeless Action. Thank you, Adrian.
I've been a fan of yours
for years, and I want to thank you for all you do. Well, folks, you've been listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holt. I want to remind folks that this program will repeat at 11 o'clock tonight on 89.1 FM. Tell your friends to tune in. It also streams on www.kbbf.org. I want to remind you, our children are the future. We must never lose sight of that. You know, we talked about homeless. You know, if we don't solve the problem, it's only going to get worse. You know, we don't want, what do we want, a whole culture to be homeless? We need to solve the problem. Anyway, you've been listening to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holst, and I've been your host, and I look forward to being with you the next time.